I'm Dr. Anthony Bolus, and welcome to Healthy Dose. We are excited to be bringing back the show to you in a special two-part series on COVID-19, where we will discuss everything you need to know, from what the disease is, how to prevent it, what treatment strategies are available, and vaccine development updates. In this very first part of the show, we will discuss the disease state information of COVID-19, along with breaking down the big question, is this really different from the flu virus?
COVID-19 is not the same as the flu. The novel 2019 coronavirus is an acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus, and flu is caused by several different types and strains of influenza viruses.
Dr. Jeff Cao, Vice Chair and Director of the Experiential Education at Samford University's McWhorter School of Pharmacy and a Clinical Pharmacy Specialist at a local medical center in the Birmingham area, joins us today to discuss the basics of COVID-19 and more on today's edition of Healthy Dose.
This is Healthy Dose, brought to you by Samford University's McWhorter School of Pharmacy in Birmingham, Alabama. Preparing pharmacists who transform lives. More on the web at samford.edu/pharmacy.
Welcome back to Healthy Dose. I'm Dr. Anthony Bolus. It has been an incredibly trying year for everyone as the world has been turned upside down by COVID-19. Numbers continue to rise, but as of September 13th, the World Health Organization has a total number of confirmed cases at just under 29 million across the globe, with just over 900,000 deaths attributed to it. As for the United States alone, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, otherwise known as the CDC, showcases around 6.5 million cases and close to 200,000 deaths associated to the disease. Not only has this disease caused tremendous health issues in our world, but also economic issues too, with many businesses scrambling to survive, and our lifestyle habits have ultimately changed forever. To continue to discuss this in greater detail about COVID-19, we bring in Dr. Jeff Cao, who is currently serving as the Vice Chair and Director of Experiential Education at Samford University's McWhorter School of Pharmacy and a Clinical Pharmacy Specialist at a local medical center in Birmingham area. Dr. Cao first explains what COVID-19 specifically stands for and where it was first identified as an epidemic before it became a pandemic, along with how it compares to other coronaviruses.
Well, just like with any good CE, we usually give some sort of disclosure. So before I begin, Anthony, and answer some of the questions that you may have for me today, I think it's important to understand that the information about this virus is consistently and rapidly evolving. And thus, what I may even share with you today may change tomorrow. But with that being said, we know that COVID-19 is a contagious respiratory virus that first was identified in China, and it's an outbreak of a respiratory illness from cases in the Wuhan city, the Hubei province in China. We know that coronaviruses are a large family of single-stranded RNA viruses that are common in people and many different species of animals, including camels, cattle, cats, and bats as well. Rarely, animal coronaviruses can infect people and then spread between people. So there are hundreds of coronaviruses circulating, and SARS-CoV-2, which is the seventh coronavirus known to infect humans, is now circulating. Although coronaviruses typically cause mild to moderate upper respiratory tract infections or illnesses, there's three novel coronavirus strains that have caused more symptoms over the last several years. Severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus, SARS-CoV, which caused an outbreak starting in 2002. And then we had MERS coronavirus, which is the Middle East respiratory syndrome coronavirus, and that caused an outbreak in 2012. And now we have SARS-CoV-2, which is responsible for the current pandemic.
Flu season is knocking on the door in the months ahead. There are many who compare COVID-19 with the flu and even ask the question, is COVID-19 really that much different than the flu virus? Dr. Cal is able to quickly explain that although symptoms may be similar to some degree, these two viruses are in fact not the same, and goes on to give a great comparison and contrast to both viruses.
Well, I think that's a good question, and I think a lot of people need to understand, especially getting closer to the flu season, it is not the same. COVID-19 is not the same as the flu. The novel 2019 coronavirus is an acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus, and flu is caused by several different types and strains of influenza viruses. So COVID-19 is one virus, while flu can be caused by several different types and strains of influenza viruses. Nevertheless, flu and COVID-19 do share similar and many characteristics, which make it hard to differentiate between the two. And so testing is needed to help confirm a diagnosis, but there are some key differences between the two. So understanding both are contagious respiratory illnesses. They can have varying degrees and signs of symptoms, ranging from no symptoms or asymptomatic to severe symptoms. Common symptoms that COVID-19 and flu share include things like fever or feverish chills, cough, shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, fatigue, tiredness, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose, muscle pains and body aches, and even headache. Some people may even have vomiting and diarrhea, though this is more common in our children than it is in adults. Different from the flu, COVID-19 may include change in or loss of taste or smell. So that's one of the symptoms that may be quite different than the flu, but they do have some overlapping similar characteristics. With regards to the spread, there are also some differences. While COVID-19 and flu viruses are thought to spread in similar ways, COVID-19 is more contagious among certain populations and age groups than the flu. Also, COVID-19 has been observed to have more superseding events than flu. This means that the virus that causes COVID-19 can quickly and easily spread to a lot of people and result in continuous spreading among people as time progresses. Now, I think it's also important to understand, too, that most people with flu are contagious for about one day before they show symptoms. Older children and adults with flu appear to be most contagious during the initial 3 to 4 days of their illness, but many remain contagious for about 7 days. How long someone can spread the virus that causes COVID-19 is really still unknown. It's possible for people to spread the virus for about 2 days before experiencing signs or symptoms and remain contagious for at least 10 days after signs and symptoms first appear. If someone is asymptomatic or their symptoms go away, it's possible to remain contagious for at least 10 days after testing positive for COVID-19. Those at risk, highest risk for both flu and COVID-19 include older adults, our pregnant population, people with certain underlying medical conditions as well. However, the risk for healthy children is higher for flu compared to COVID-19. And in infants and children with underlying medical conditions, they're at risk for both increased flu and COVID-19. Then we know that there are also FDA-approved treatment options and vaccine options for the flu, but right now not for COVID-19. So those are some contrasting and some similarities between both of these viruses.
In terms of what we know now for treatments available for COVID-19 and vaccine production updates, please check out our Part 2 episode that will go into further detail. As Dr. Cal mentioned, it may be difficult to decipher between a diagnosis of the flu and COVID-19. Testing is very important. Dr. Cal further illustrates the testing available for COVID-19.
There's two kinds of tests that are available for COVID-19, viral test and antibody test. A viral test tells you if you have a current infection, and an antibody test might tell you if you've had a past infection. People who should get tested, this has always been a question, who should or shouldn't, should I get tested? A lot of us are getting that question in our practices of, I should go get tested, right? And so the people that should get tested include people who have symptoms of COVID-19, those symptoms I was just mentioning. People who have had close contact, meaning within 6 feet of an infected person for at least 15 minutes. So close contact of a person with someone that has had COVID-19 or confirmed COVID-19. So again, within 6 feet for longer than or at 15 minutes. And people who have been asked or referred to get testing by their healthcare provider. I don't want to, you know, step on anybody's toes. So if your healthcare provider has deemed you needing to be tested, certainly you need to make sure that you get tested. Where you can go to get tested, I know that I've instructed people just to visit their state or local health department websites. And on those websites, they should have a listing for local information on where they may go get tested. There are many pharmacies out there that have drive-through options that they can get tested. There are many healthcare clinics and hospitals that have testing centers as well. So I always encourage folks to check their state and local health department's websites for hours of operation, what they may have to take with them to get tested, or if they have to have an appointment. Now, if you have symptoms of COVID-19 and want to get tested, I think it's important, too, that you don't exclude your healthcare provider. You need to make sure that if you are going to get tested, that you do inform your healthcare provider as well. And if you test positive, you need to know what protective steps to take to prevent others from getting it, especially if you live in a household with other family members. If you test negative, you probably were not infected at the time the sample was collected, and I think that's important. The test results only mean that you don't have COVID at the time of testing. So I think that's something to understand, that the day that you get tested is, you know, is the day that it's confirming whether you have it or you don't. And if you don't have it that day, that doesn't exclude you from having it 24 hours after that particular test.
Complications of COVID-19 continue to be studied and researched, but Dr. Cowell is able to give us a brief understanding of what we do know in terms of complications to this disease as of now.
This is an evolving area. Even in the last, I'd say, 2 months, we've started seeing more and more case reports of folks who have had COVID and some of the complications that are starting to come about and be reported. But I would tell you that some of the complications that have certainly been confirmed, a lot of it is related to secondary bacterial infections, lower respiratory tract infections such as pneumonia. Extreme circumstances, COVID can actually lead to respiratory failure or something known as acute respiratory distress syndrome as well, where essentially there's fluid in the lungs. On some occasions, it could lead to sepsis-like syndromes. We could have cardiac injury, and then unfortunately, it can lead to multiple organ failure as well. Different organs from the lungs to the kidneys can fail as a result of this, and those are complications. Maybe a newer complication that we're starting to learn more and more about are blood clots in the veins and arteries of the lungs, hearts, legs, and the brain that we're finding that has been associated with folks that have had COVID-19. And then I've understood, I'm not a pediatric pharmacist or practitioner, but I've also understood from my colleagues that children may have complications, and I think they've termed this a multi-system inflammatory syndrome that they may experience.
Without many medicinal treatments available, prevention becomes key by washing, distancing, and masking up. Dr. Cowell helps to reiterate these important best practices in order to decrease the spread of COVID-19.
You know, there is a lot of myths, misnomers, and people kind of taking prevention, some taking it seriously, some saying, you know, not. The best way to prevent illness is ultimately to avoid being exposed to the virus. That's easier said than actually done. We don't know who has it. We don't walk around with, you know, a little sign that says I have the virus. And that's why we're doing a lot of what you mentioned, social distancing and isolating ourselves and quarantining ourselves and keeping our distance from others. But other precautions besides just practicing good social distancing by maintaining that 6-foot difference between you and the other person would be certainly wear a mask. It's uncomfortable. Do I like wearing a mask? No. Do I forget my mask in the car or at home sometimes? Yes. Do I turn around and get it? Yes. Am I late as a result? Yes. I mean, there's the frustrations of wearing that mask, but everyone should be wearing a mask in public. Washing our hands. You know, this is a simple way to really prevent any sort of infection. And so one of the best ways you can ever prevent transmission is to wash your hands. And the suggestion is, you know, to wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. Maybe you're singing the song Happy Birthday. Row, Row, Row Your Boat is another song that you can do. But it's not just washing the palms of your hands, it's also washing the backs of our hands. We tend to focus on the fronts, you know, the palms and the inside parts of our hands, but also washing the back of our hands as well. And then lastly is just regular cleaning and then disinfecting frequently touched surfaces, really on a daily basis. This includes, you know, tables, doorknobs, light switches, countertops, desks, phones. How many times are we touching our phones or our iPhones? Keyboards, toilets, faucets, sinks, even our steering wheel in our car. So this has become a great chore at our house that we have enlisted help of my 8 and 9 year old that usually on a daily basis we give them a Lysol wipe or two, and we ask them to go around to all the door handles in our house and wipe those down. So it certainly can be a good chore for your, if you have kids, for them to do. But cleaning and disinfecting would be another way for preventing this virus to spread.
We are so grateful for all of the healthcare workers who continue to work each day in helping to prevent and treat patients with COVID-19 in our world. Dr. Cowell explains how one of those providers, pharmacists, can be an asset to the healthcare team by helping to keep the public safe by specifically being a reputable source of information.
We always say that we are in a key position to really assist the healthcare team in ensuring that our public remains safe. And ultimately, that is our job, is we want to ensure public safety with regards to any sort of disease, and in this particular case, an infection. So I think one key thing that we can do is certainly educate the public about the appropriate measures to prevent the spread. As we were mentioning about prevention, I think we need to educate them on how to do that properly. As we all know, the internet is currently filled with articles, videos, and posts about COVID-19, but not all of these resources are accurate. As you know, we're pretty well educated, and we should be able to share reliable and accurate information to the public about COVID-19. We should be that liaison between and filter between accurate information and trying to get that information out to the public versus that is erroneous or inaccurate. And so that's certainly one thing that we can do to help reduce the panic of the public, because I know I've talked to a lot of patients who really have a lot of questions, and it's interesting some of the questions that I get or some of the statements that are made by the public. It really makes me scratch my head and go, where did you get this information? And so I spend some of my time really providing more accurate information and dismissing the myths or the inaccuracies that may be out there. I think we can also work with our infection control friends in the healthcare facilities to ensure that appropriate infection prevention and recommendations are in place. And then lastly, I think we just can serve as good role models. Many of us interact with patients every single day, and we can serve as great role models by showing preventative behaviors like regular hand washing and wearing of the masks. We should be able to show the public that we are taking the threat of COVID-19 seriously, and so as a result, they should as well.
Lastly, Dr. Cowell gives his final thoughts on COVID-19, in which he ultimately states to simply take this seriously, as we are all still learning exactly what the virus is.
I would say that it is important that we take this very seriously. We know some of the negative effects that it can have. I've seen firsthand some of those negative effects, but yet we do not know all of the negative effects that it may have. I think it's important to keep working to slow the spread of the virus by staying at home when you can, staying 6 feet away from others, wearing a mask, covering your coughs and your sneezes, and washing your hands often and well. Those are my last words that I would say, is I think we really need to consistently and continually take this as a very serious infection, a very serious infectious disease and virus, because we just don't know all of the aspects of this virus yet. And why not be safe rather than sorry? So those are the things that I would, high points that I would probably try to emphasize to those listeners today.
Please be sure to continue to practice those preventative strategies of wash, distance, and mask in order to help slow the spread of COVID-19 so that we have the time to develop better treatment strategies and a vaccine in the months ahead. talking about treatment strategies and vaccine updates, please tune in to our part two episode on COVID-19 as we break down the top treatment strategies available now, along with getting a better of idea on what vaccine may be available soon. For Healthy Dose, I'm Dr. Anthony Bolus.